Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Living the good life nationally here. Celebrating 28 years and celebrating Paxton Quigley yet again. Continuing with Cannabis Healing Live from Miami. Paxton, good morning.
Well, good morning, Adam, and hello to all of our Cannabis Healing listeners around the world. But first, a word from one of our sponsors, voiceover coach Steve Guerin.
There is a constant search for new talent in the rewarding and lucrative world of voiceovers. Do you think you have what it takes? Steve Guerin's Voice Works, since 1988, offers Skype training. For more information about signing up for Skype voiceover coaching sessions, email Steve at voiceworksnyc@gmail.com. That's voiceworksnyc@gmail.com.
Folks, times are a-changing for the 2020 Summer Olympics. For the first time, CBD has been removed from its list of illegal drugs, and athletes can actually use legally CBD without fear of consequences. However, athletes must ensure that CBD oil or supplements don't contain more than 0.3% THC. That's the psychoactive element in cannabis. So we'll wait to see what happens in 2020 at the Olympics. Our guest today is Martin A. Lee. He's a CBD expert, director of Project CBD, and author of Smoke Signals, a social history of marijuana, medical, recreational, and scientific. Martin A. Lee, welcome to Cannabis Healing, and how are you?
Okay, thank you very much for having me on.
Sure. I want to tell you, I love your introduction to your recent article on your Project CBD site, where you say, and I quote, "The FDA has got a bad case of CBD as in chronic bureaucratic dysfunction. This affliction has been evident for some time, but the symptoms are getting worse." I loved it. So anyway, well, you talked about the Food and Drug Administration's inability to clearly understand and therefore categorize CBD. Can you tell us what prompted you to write that article?
Well, Project CBD has been in existence for 10 years. We introduced CBD into the medical cannabis community in California, and it spread from there. So we've been cognizant of CBD and its potential therapeutically for a long time, and we've played a role in trying to bring that to the attention of people. And now, of course, it's a huge phenomenon all around the world. We're disturbed, obviously, by the federal government's inability to respond to the potential of CBD in a way that bears any semblance of coherence, frankly. It's ridiculous. I don't think it's a matter that the FDA doesn't understand CBD is safe. As you pointed out, the Olympic Committee now has removed CBD from the list of banned substances. The World Health Organization has given CBD a clean bill of health. And yet the FDA claims more evidence is needed to know if it's really safe. And that's the kind of a con artist fallback rhetoric that typically officials invoke when they don't want to do anything, when they don't want to change anything. That's how they're responding to CBD. You can always say more information is needed or more information is wanted. Who doesn't want more information? Everybody wants more information. But we're at the point, as the Olympic Committee and the World Health Organization and millions of people around the world and most states in the United States, the governments, understand that CBD is safe and should be accessible to people to use in a variety of ways. So that's really what prompted me to write a critical assessment of the FDA's more recent statements about CBD, which they began issuing late last year.
Now, I want to ask you something. Do you think there's any possibility that the pharmaceuticals may be involved in this? Because obviously, a person doesn't necessarily have to take an aspirin. He can have some CBD and get the same results.
Well, I think that's part of it, in the sense that CBD has been approved by the FDA as a pharmaceutical, but only that. you know, CBD is, it comes from a plant. It comes from the cannabis plant. And it's useful for many different things. But the FDA only recognizes its value as a single molecule pharmaceutical, as an isolated molecule. Whereas we know full well that people use it as part of oil extracts, full spectrum essential oils. They use it as topicals. It can be used. It can be ingested sublingually or simply swallowed. It could be used in so many ways that to restrict its use just to a pharmaceutical isolated compound, it doesn't really make any sense, and it really undermines the potential of what can be done with what we say we in California refer to as CBD-rich cannabis. I think a pharmaceutical element is part of it because the FDA clings to a policy that it enforces, whereas pharmaceutical companies are always privileged over other options. So that and that's part of the law, actually. It's in 1994. Exclusionary Act, Congress passed the law, a very comprehensive law, regulating supposedly supplements. And as a result of that, if a compound is already a pharmaceutical, already in development as a pharmaceutical, to become a pharmaceutical, then that gets privilege over anything else. So since it's been ordained or sanctified as a pharmaceutical, it's called Epidiolex, produced by the British company GW Pharmaceuticals, because that's already approved, the FDA says, well, you can't have anything else because that's just the way they do it. So they're refusing basically to re-examine their policy, to re-examine their premises. That's why I refer to bureaucratic dysfunction. They just don't change. They're unwilling to change. And in this case, they have to change and adapt in response to CBD because its potential is so unique and enormous, and the ways you can use it indicate such versatility.
Now, do you ever have any conversations with any of the people over at the FDA? Are you interviewing anybody and seeing if you can, change their minds, or is that impossible?
One of the problems is there's no head of the FDA right now. The former head resigned. And because of the frictions between the Democrats and Republicans in Washington, Democrats are refusing to authorize any new appointments on the part of Trump. And I'm not going to comment on that, if that's good or bad or whatever. That's just the way it is. So that, again, reinforces this bureaucratic stasis. But the FDA has been very much aware of Project CBD's work for a long time, because we're really the first organization to criticize the quality of some of these products, some of the CBD products that are circulated in the unregulated marketplace. You know, it's not all peaches and cream. There's problems with some of these products. They're not labeled correctly. Some of them are tainted with contaminants and so forth. But this is a matter of regulation. It underscores why the FDA needs to step up to the plate and regulate this stuff properly. People want it to be regulated. We testified before the, it was last July, my colleague, maybe it was June of 2019, my colleague Zoe Sigmund, she provided oral testimony to the FDA when they sought public comments about how what they should do about CBD. So they're aware of what we're up to, and I'm sure they've seen this article, because I think they're somewhat sensitive to public opinion. It's just, again, the bureaucratic lack of movement is so profound and deep that we're just stuck with the situation for the time being.
Now, tell us a little bit about your book, Smoke Signals, A Social History of Marijuana, Medical, Recreational, and Scientific. I'm interested in that. And when did you gather all your information? And also, how can people, read it, too?
Sure. You can get it, obviously, from Amazon.com. It was published a few years ago, just before the first states, Colorado and Washington, legalized cannabis for adult use. And really, it's the story told through characters. It's a social history, so it's a character-driven history. To explain to how we got to the point where we are now in our society, in our culture, where things are shifting so dramatically with respect to attitudes toward cannabis, toward CBD, toward THC for that matter, where there's no question we're in the midst of a pro-cannabis cultural shift. And this was after a long prohibition. You know, it goes back more than 75 years that cannabis, foolishly, incorrectly, in my opinion, has been considered a dangerous drug with no medical value. It's just like saying the moon is made of green cheese. It just has no bearing, no relationship to reality. So that's what prompted me to write the book and the set of experiences that went into that as a reporter, as a journalist that was covering the medical marijuana phenomenon in California. And those same set of experiences that informed the decision to be involved with the launching of Project CBD, a nonprofit educational group, that also went into the writing of the book. So it's a good read in the sense that it's not a dry history. It's a drama, it has characters, and it's an amazing story of how we got to the point today where this plant has forced us to change our attitudes. It's really quite a phenomenal story when it comes down to it.
Yes, well, I think you have really given us a nice historical introduction, and I'm hoping that our readers will be interested in purchasing the book. Are you planning to write any a new book?
Well, we're writing all the time. Every week we put out new material on projectcbd.org. That's our website.
This sounds absolutely wonderful. I have been looking at your site, and I want to recommend it to all of our listeners. And we'd love to have you on again in a couple of months and talk about some of your latest articles and help promote you. And so thank you so much for being on Cannabis Healing today.
And thank you for your efforts as well.
Thank you. Folks, that's our show for today. We'd like to thank Tikkun Olam, cannabis and hemp producer and medical research company, for sponsoring today's show. And we invite our listeners to search my name, Paxton Quigley, and visit us on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn, where you can listen to this broadcast, which is really important, as well as past broadcasts, and join the conversation. So stay healthy, balanced, and stay in touch. I'm Paxton Quigley.